Selection 6, take 1.
This outtake from a 1957 session with Thelonious Monk is included on the new box set, Thelonious Monk, The Complete Riverside Recordings. It just won 2 Grammys for producer Oren Keepnews, Best Historical Album and Best Liner Notes. Keepnews is one of the most respected record producers of contemporary jazz. He founded 2 of the most important independent jazz labels, Riverside and Milestone. And he recorded seminal work by musicians such as Bill Evans, Sonny Rollins, Wes Montgomery, and Cannonball Adderley. Keepnews produced Thelonious Monk's most important body of work.
We're not making one, anyway.
Thought we were.
Oh, you want to make one? Oh, we want to make it. Yeah, okay, we'll make it now. Yeah, make it.
You know, I bet in putting this box together that there were many sessions that at the time seemed kind of disastrous, but looking at it now, historically, they're fascinating.
I think you've hit on one of the most intriguing aspects of this kind of compilation, as far as I'm concerned. Material that you would not think of attempting to do anything with in its normal state does take on a good deal of fascination and value when put in a historical context. So when you're doing a complete recordings of, you have a great deal of latitude. There were specific unissued chunks of material which makes sense in the context of an overall retrospective, which is exactly what this is, of Thelonious's work at the time.
When you worked with Monk, you were a young producer working with one of the most brilliant and one of the most eccentric musicians in the whole history of jazz. What was he like to record? How did his eccentricities express themselves in the recording studio?
Well, first of all, calling me a young producer is really giving me the best of it. I was an absolutely naive, childish, inexperienced producer back then, so that I look back on those sessions and the difficulties of this man as being the most important learning experience in my career. He was difficult for a number of reasons, but I think the most important reason that he was difficult is this was a sort of completely self-contained man. He knew exactly what he wanted out of his music, and he was every bit as demanding of other people, the other musicians and myself, as he was of himself. And that was very unfair, because he knew what it was all about, and we really didn't. We had to kind of catch on this express train as it went roaring by. He was never a patient man, and I think he legitimately did not understand that it was difficult for other people to appreciate and understand his music, and difficult even for very talented musicians to perform it to his satisfaction very quickly.
In your liner notes, you write that working on behalf of an artist doesn't mean you have to be a doormat. You know, that working with an artist and trying to be, you know, on their side doesn't mean you just, like, put up with anything. What gave you that realization?
That realization was spurred by these early encounters with Thelonious. And I recall one specific situation where it was the first time, the first of 2 separate occasions that I did a totally solo album with him, just a solo piano album. And he showed up for a session close to an hour late and really in no condition to go to work. And I somehow or other lost my temper, informed him that I really didn't care whether or not he had respect for me, but I had to have respect for me, and that in the future, anybody can have, say, 15 minutes or so of leeway, but if he wasn't going to be there within a half an hour of the appointed time, don't bother to show up because I wouldn't be there. We rescheduled this date for a few days later. I got there about 10 or 15 minutes early, and he was sitting in the control room waiting for me and with a beautiful big smile, which he was quite capable of. He said, what kept you?
Was that a turning point in your relationship with him?
I think so. I think, not that I, in no way was this deliberate, but I, when I eventually stood up there and said, hey, you know, I'm a human being too, and get off my back and things like that, it worked. And we had a, for the next several years, I think had a very good and I think obviously very creative and to me very satisfying working relationship.
Over the years, how has your idea of what a producer does changed?
Well, I don't know that it actually has fundamentally changed. Again, because I probably learned my lesson so well at the hands of a master, Thelonious. But I, from the beginning, conceived of the role of the producer as being a catalytic agent, and feeling that my job was to create the circumstances, set the scene in such a way that the artist could behave at his creative best. And although my methods of accomplishing that or my techniques of doing it have undoubtedly changed and developed and become more flexible over the years, that concept, I guess, as I look back on it, has stayed with me for over 30 years.
In terms of scene setting, I know that some musicians think of the producer as the guy who goes out and buys the bottle for the session.
That's one important function.
Well, did you ever object to that if musicians wanted a drink during a recording session? Or would you, like, monitor to see, well, are they getting too high to perform well?
Well, let me put it this way. That is part of what I mean when I say that no two artists can be approached in exactly the same way, probably not even any two sessions with the same artist. You have to be able to evaluate the situation and go with it. I mean, I would find it about as foolish to have a ironclad no drinking on my dates rule as I would to have a, you know, no blues rule or a no electric piano rule. Or I believe in flexibility, and flexibility is very much a matter of how you deal with people and how you expect them to deal with you.
In your liner notes for the Thelonious Monk box set, you say that you really learned that musicians saw both record companies and record producers as the enemy, or at least the opposition. I'm going to ask you to briefly explain why so many musicians feel that way about record producers and what you tried to do to prove that you didn't want to be the enemy or the opposition.
Well, I guess it's a complex thing in the sense that, I guess obviously to some extent I was talking about a racial situation. Most jazz musicians are black. Most record company executives and producers are white. That should be reasonably self-explanatory as an initial attitude. I've always felt that I've lived in a musical world, in an environment that basically properly belongs to the black artist, that I have to prove my way in that world. And I also think that it was a matter of the, you know, the employer and employee relationship, which comes into the picture. These are things that I tried to break down.
Having worked at independent companies and run your own, what do you think is the difference between the role of the independent jazz company and the larger, more commercial jazz company?
Well, jazz could not have survived if it were not for the independent labels. That the kind of freedom from excessive commercial demands and the kind of one-on-one personal relationship that can exist between the company or the producer and the artist is only possible at the independent level. And jazz needs that kind of personal relationship in order to survive and expand and thrive.
Orrin Keepnews currently produces for his label Landmark Records. Here's another Thelonious Monk recording included on the Complete Riverside Recordings. Fresh Air.